Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relation.
So full of lies, when no word is spoken of why the Indian dies and dies and dies. Oh, that the Chicana loves the California land. Do our books all say it was discovered by one white man? Well, that's just a lie. One of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Oh, why are the weapons of the war so young? And why are there only rich ones around when it's done? Why are so many of the soldiers black or brown? Do we think it's because they're good at cutting other people down? Well, that's just a lie. one of the many, and we've had plenty. I don't want more of the same. No more genocide in my name. Nazi forces grow again. Ignorance gives them a place. The Klan is teaching children to hate the human race. Where once there was a playground, now an MX missile plant. Do they think it's fun and games to see just how much we can stand? People die around the world from starvation and grief all the time. Some folks try to avoid the truth by saying God and gun will provide. In Rome, in Cape Town, in Beirut, San Salvador, Greensboro, Belfast, Manila, and many more. It's a crime. Do we think the fascist right will save the world in time? They try to tell us all. We've got to tell them no.
Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, broadcast here on Global Community Radio Station, Radio for Peace International. That song was entitled No More Genocide in My Name, from the classic tune from singer-songwriter Holly Near. We featured that song as an honor to today's program guest, Holly Rowan. That song for peace and justice exemplifies the spirit of my friend who is here in the studio. Holly has devoted her life to peace, to human rights, and social justice. She is a strong defender of the environment. As a professional nurse and midwife, Holly is well respected in the field of health and women's rights. She has been a peace warrior on the front lines for many, many years. Some of our worldwide listeners may know about Holly from her 1980s anti-war activism against United States intervention in what's now called Central America. In 1987, while protesting at the U.S. Naval Weapons infamous facility, Port Chicago, her ex-husband Brian Wilson lost his legs when he was run over by a military weapons supply train at that California base. As many listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, in the 1980s, I also was deeply involved against the U.S. war in Central America and helped co-sponsor one of the first Mayan Indians to be granted sanctuary by a Native American tribal nation. I was a journalist covering the war in Abiyala, the indigenous name of this region, more commonly called Central America. At that time, I had the honor to visit a number of indigenous communities in each Central American country, until a brutal situation against Mayan Indians in Guatemala, which I exposed, got me expelled from the region. Upon my return to the U.S., I did hear about what happened to Brian, and so I am indeed privileged to now be friends with our dear sister, Holly. I am very, very honored to call her my friend. She is a sister in what I term the Earth Justice Movement, the worldwide grassroots intercultural movement to fight against globalization and fight for the well-being of all life on Mother Earth. This is at the heart of what we here at Yat Kitishi Native Center is also dedicated to. I met Holly at a 2003 Earth Charter Forum that I spoke at. I knew then that we would become friends and would work together in future community actions for Earth justice. This past year, the Great Spirit gifted us an opportunity to come together with other fine community activists to form the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television. Our TV program entitled Interconnections serves to inform, educate, and enlighten our viewers about important issues of our times. The vision and mission of our TV coalition is very, very special. I wish to read some excerpts from our brochure and websites, since these statements very well express a philosophy that I know Holly and us here at Yad Kiddush Native Center believe in. The mission statement of Interconnections. The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television believes that many of the complex and diverse problems facing the world today stem from our mistreatment of one another and of our planet. These problems can be resolved peacefully and ethically with informed and democratic decision-making. Our weekly show, Interconnections, will remind viewers that the world consists of one people sharing common goals, to live in peace with one another, and to care for our planet and our young. War and violence are not valid solutions to the problems facing humanity. All of life is interconnected. Peace is the answer. Realizing this interconnectedness of all living creatures is the way. Our vision statement reads, "The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television is concerned about the direction our society has been moving. We believe it is time to move in a different direction. Life on Earth is at a critical point. Our future and our planet's well-being depend upon what type of society we humans choose to create. Our coalition is concerned about cultural, environmental, social justice, economic, health, and peace issues. Interconnections will highlight these and other themes while providing local, national, and international perspectives. The Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television serves as a voice for those not often heard. Our weekly show, Interconnections, will also provide you with the news and information you need to make a difference. The coalition also wants to hear from you. Please send us your comments and suggestions. And finally, the goals of the Southwest Florida Coalition for Progressive Television are to inform, educate, and enlighten our viewers about the important issues of our time, to motivate people to work for change, to provide a public forum for progressive voices, for change to be heard in our community. Well, dear friends, there are many other highlights I could mention as an introduction to our special guest, Holly, here, but I will defer to Holly to tell us more about herself and some of the wonderful things that has been a part of her life. Let me just reiterate that we of Yad Kiddush Native Center are honored to share friendship and the important work of Earth Justice with her. This broadcast is program 3 of our special interview with peace and anti-globalization activist Holly Rowan. In our previous program, part 2, we spoke about Earth Justice, more commonly called environmental social justice. We spoke about the monster issue of nuclear technology, that is, mining uranium on native lands throughout the world, testing of nuclear weapons at the expense of indigenous peoples' territories, such as in the so-called South Pacific, or here in Turtle Island, North America, specifically in Nui Sogabia, the Nui or Western Shoshone Indian Nation's traditional territory, now called the state of Nevada. We also talked about the importance of defending Mother Earth by coalition building among and between indigenous peoples and peace, environmental, and social justice groups. An example, the Shundahai Network in Nui Sogabia and the Clamshell Alliance in my Wabanaki homeland. Building the Earth Justice Movement requires respecting all peoples and encouraging cultural diversity in a manner that fosters and promotes equal inclusion and involvement in decision-making. This is a major focus of our work at Yad Kiddush Native Center, especially getting the voice of indigenous peoples heard. We work to ensure people of color, people of culture, such as my indigenous peoples, are also equal members of the leadership of what I term the Earth Justice Movement. The environmental social justice movement needs more diversity, especially the knowledge, wisdom, and spirit of indigenous peoples who live by the principle of the seventh generation. That is our natural law to have reverence for Mother Earth and to think how our thoughts and actions affect seven future generations. Holly, this brings us to my next question, the subject of globalization. Globalization is a cancer on the planet. Globalization is just a new name for disease that has affected many peoples around the globe for at least the last 500 years, we call colonization. This modern version stems from those early European conquistadors and Christian zealots who were responsible for a native Holocaust in the Western Hemisphere, as well as in other places around the world. It expanded through the era of commercial exploitation when sea captains sailed the ocean under government authority and corporate sponsorship, bringing settlers for economic and political occupation of lands held sacred by non-white civilizations. Now, in the new millennium, this globalization sickness continues to spread over the globe. The ever-increasing desecration and devastation to sacred Mother Earth and the ever-widening gap between the rich and the poor of the world is a major concern of ours. Yet, Kitishi Native Center is very proud to be a part of the fine worldwide grassroots anti-globalization movement. Personally, I've been fighting so-called development organizations such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, for many, many years. Even many of United Nations initiatives and agencies, such as the UN Development Program, the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, the UN Environment Program, and the UN Commission for Sustainable Development, must change their ways if sustainable communities and the protection of the earth are truly going to happen. The abusive power of global multinational corporations and their partnerships with international banks and financial institutions increasingly control so-called free trade. As a consultant to Greenpeace USA's project on the World Bank and International Monetary Fund in the 1990s, I know how agreements such as GATT and NAFTA, as example, are detrimental to the majority of the world's poor and to our planet's environment. The increasing role of the private sector in so-called development is very worrisome to me. This focus at the UN Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, and at the UN World Summit on Sustainable Development, the Johannesburg Conference, exemplifies a growing relationship between business and governments and dictating how food, water, energy, land and natural resources, for examples, are controlled and commodified. For indigenous peoples, our 1992 Carioca Declaration and our 2000 Kimberley Declaration are clear expressions of the world's indigenous peoples' concern about earth justice and globalization. There are many more things I could speak about on these serious issues, as our Wolf Mountain Native Radio programs have reported on over the years. But for now, Holly, let me please ask you about your thoughts on globalization.
Thank you. I was, when you were talking about the USAID, I sort of chuckled too. I went to Grenada, the island of Grenada, about 12 years ago, and one of the first buildings I saw when I started to tour the island was a building built by the USAID, and consequently, I met a lot of the people living on the inland of the island, and they were telling me how that was the beginning of the end for them. When globalization, what we call globalization, the IMF, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, and now the Free Trade Area of the Americas, all represent what you might call colonialization, but even more, it's the corporate takeover of the world. It become hard for me to ignore over the years. And I live a very comfortable lifestyle myself. And I grew up privileged in Los Angeles in California. And my father was a corporate man. And he's now into mergers and acquisitions. And so, you know, I come from the belly of the beast. I don't think it makes me more responsible or less responsible. But the more that I am aware of the underlying greed that drives our country and our organizations and our banking system and our attitude towards the rest of the world, the more I feel like I do have to do something about it. And sometimes it's really overwhelming, you know, what is really real and what's really effective and what can I do? There's got to be a way that we can have fair trade among people instead of what they call free trade. Because what we might call free trade here is encouraging slavery and oppression and the rape of the earth. And there's an attitude that seems to be prevalent in the corporate world that comes from here, the first world in the United States, and that's those that have, which are a very small percentage of the rest of the earth, are somehow entitled. There's this attitude of entitlement that says, I am worth more and you are worth less. And this is the root of all evil. This is the root of all evil. In my heart, I can really see it, and to see how it spread is just really overwhelming. I sat back and watched a lot of protests over the last 10 years of people like me that came from middle class America that started to say, no, this cannot go on in my name. This kind of oppression, this kind of we over them, this kind of greed, that's corporate greed, that drives our politicians, that runs both the Democrat and the Republican Party in this country. I mean, the elections that we have coming up in the future, I don't even want to talk about, actually. It all comes back around to the organizations that you were mentioning, because these are the powers that drive our politicians, are those that have the most power on this earth right now. And we know, you and I know, that that is not real power, because the real power there is love. Is love, and it is the natural law, exactly. And it's one of harmony, of living in harmony with each other, which means justice for all people. Justice for all people, every single living human being on the planet. And we're not seeing that. We're not seeing that in the Caribbean. We're not seeing that in Haiti. We're not seeing that in South America. We're not seeing that in Immokalee down the road from us, where there is still slave labor going on right now as I speak. And so we don't, what I'm learning is I don't have to go very far away from where I live in my own home. I live in Fort Myers, Florida, right near here, to say no to this big, huge entity that we might call globalization, or the World Bank, or the IMF, the World Monetary Fund, because they're all different arms of the same big monster. It's like a big octopus of greed. It is. It's like a big octopus of greed, but I think there's a way, if enough of us fish that are swimming in that same sea, you know, can get together. I don't know how it is, but every little way we can, it's going to start with you and me right here, for us to try and overcome our differences and look for that spirit of real humanity that is the same and that is worth the same in your being and in my being and my sister's being sitting next to me.
Wakandangaya Onchimalayo yo yo Wichane Shankuayo yo yo Wichane Shankuane hey anne yo we hey anne yo we hey anne yo we ho Wakantanka Onchimalaya Wichane Shankuayo Wakantanka Onchimala Wichane Shankuayo Hey Anna, hey Anne, oh hey 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 Hey Anna, hey Anne, oh hey
It's yet to willow, it's yet to willow This is good Peace to your journey, love and light to your path. One in spirit, journey well. Aho.
Holly, your use of the metaphor an octopus describing the corporate global control of multinational corporations, the globalization disease. I really concur a lot with you on that metaphor, and I use that a lot in my public speaking. As you know, one of the major issues that I focus on much of my life is the issue of protecting our sacred forests throughout the world. And I am very much involved as a professional forest ecologist with the worldwide forest conservation movement and the indigenous forestry efforts as well. And I just was thinking about the impact of multinational forest industries, the pulp and paper companies, for example, how they raped and destroyed my sacred homeland in what's now called Maine at approximately 100 trees an hour, 24 hours a day with two people in a machine. And when I was battling those multinational paper companies in my Indian homeland, later on when I had a chance to live in Southeast Asia as a forest ecologist, I was battling another tentacle of those same corporations. And then when I visited what's now called Central America, Abiyala, again, another arm of that octopus was destroying those sacred forests. So it is really a worldwide global phenomena, and I know the corporations really think that way. Nearly 20 years ago, I had the honor to be part of an international Native conference dealing with the role and influence and power of multinational corporations in Native lands all over the world. And we had Native people from many parts of the world come to what's now called Washington, D.C., and also on Onondaga and the Haudenosaunee territory to discuss this. So this is a issue and a metaphor that is very much close to my home. And anyone who is interested, especially on protecting our sacred forests, our relatives, I just refer to the Letitia Declaration and later the Wendake Declarations that we Indigenous Peoples Caucus have presented to the World Forestry Congresses over the years. I'm going to now turn my attention to the question of your involvement against CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, as it's called, and I guess what is characterized as the Miami protest 2003, that you were there and actually were wounded by police brutality. Would you please share with our worldwide listeners your thoughts and experiences about your time in Miami?
Certainly. It was just about a year ago, actually. The free trade area of the Americas is like the World Trade Organization for our hemisphere here. They've been looking for a home to make their center. Couple of cities here in the United States, as well as in this hemisphere, I believe in South America, for example, were kind of vying for a contract, so to speak, where they could make their home and make their agreements, their trade agreements, which of course are only made by the corporate and political leaders of the country and the workers that would support the agriculture, the production, the manufacture, whatever it is, whatever areas of trade they're talking about are not involved in those decisions. And so they came to Miami to have one of their big meetings. The meeting that they'd had before that was in Cancun, Mexico. A lot of my friends were there protesting in the streets, and they actually shut it down. And that they were feeling very empowered by some of what happened there, because no agreements were really made, or very few agreements were made at that time. So the next big meeting was in Miami last November. And so there was an international call put out for Friends of the Earth and Friends of the People, whoever they were, to gather in Miami to let the representatives of the FTAA, of the Free Trade Area of the Americas, know that we didn't want them there in Miami, and then we didn't want their organization to make decisions about the lands and the people and the factories and the workers in all of our countries. And so it was a very big protest, and the trade unions here in the United States sent huge delegations into Miami. Farm workers from all over the country also gathered there. Anti-war activists, religious leaders, civil rights activists, all agreed to gather there. As the time drew near, Homeland Security, the state of Florida, the Patriot Act, and their players all decided to get together, and they hired John Timoney, the chief of police, made him chief of police in Miami decided to try out all of their new tactics for Homeland Security, and they really wanted to scare protesters and to scare the activists from coming into Miami and protesting there. They did not want our voices to be heard by the representatives of the FTAA because they wanted a contract with them to bring more business and commerce to the city of Miami and the state of Florida. And so for many, many reasons, they did not want our voices to be heard. And if our voices to be heard, they wanted us to seem like radical, violent, crazy hoodlums, which are exactly John Timoney's words and descriptions of those of us peace-loving people, of respected retired workers union, the AFL-CIO, the steel workers union, all of us. They were they told the merchants downtown Miami, the churches, the schools, that hoodlums and criminals and terrorists were coming into the city and that they should lock up and shut down the city and they should be afraid of us. And busloads of us came in from all over the country. Many of the streets were blocked off. The police, the National Guard, I can't remember, I think it was somewhere around 15, 16 different agencies, law enforcement and military agencies, were there. I was with my cluster, the Pagan Cluster, which was part of a much larger group of nonviolent activists called the Green Bloc, who were environmental activists, decided to be there as well. And so we form our little affinity groups, and then we have bigger groups that we would march with. There was a really, really big march planned. It was a permitted march that started on Biscayne Boulevard in downtown Miami. The bus loads of people coming in, large numbers of them were not even allowed into the city. The police did everything they could to keep activists from even getting to the permitted march to be able to be a part of the march. I got into Miami the night before, and I stayed in Miami Beach, and it took me about 2 hours to get from Miami Beach to downtown Biscayne Boulevard because every exit I took, every street I tried to walk down was blocked by the police. And it was really, really difficult to even get to the march. So I finally did meet up with my cluster, and we... There, I don't remember how many of us there were, probably around 100 of us or so, and we were all dressed in blue, and we decided that we would represent a living river. And so we had long, big, long, beautiful blue netting that, with two sticks on each end, stretched out, if we moved them up and down, over a one or two city blocks length in the march, we really looked like a living river. And so we called ourselves a living river, and we had little fish coming down from the river because we were there because we wanted to protect the waters of the earth, which are sacred to all of us and are vital for our life and the air of the earth. And so we had a chant that we chanted as we marched down the street, and it went like this: FTAA, we say no. Don't privatize the waters. Let the rivers flow. It was really beautiful. It was one of the high points of my life, of my spiritual life, to be marching down the street with hundreds of thousands of people. And it was difficult for us to get there, and we felt the police presence around us, but we did complete our march as a living river. At the end of the march, there's a big arena where there was a rally that was also permitted and planned. And as we marched into Biscayne Boulevard back as the living river, there were police and union people, and I believe probably a lot of provocateurs as well, at the entrance saying, okay, go into the arena right now, or if you don't go in right now, you don't get to go in, and they don't get to go out. And so I got a very bad feeling when that happened, that there was something going to go on. So as a group, as a cluster, we decided not to go into the arena. We didn't want to be trapped in there. We were tired. We'd been marching all day, and many of the people in my group had been maced and tear gassed earlier in the morning at an earlier nonviolent action that they attempted to do, but they were clubbed down by the police. So we all sat on the lawn in front of the arena and fed each other food that we had in our packs, and we regrouped, and we were singing some songs in praise of the Mother Earth, and we were just relaxing there. But as we were relaxing there, and people were still coming in from the march and resting on the lawn with us and milling around the streets, socializing, we noticed one, and two, and three, and four helicopters come over our head. As the helicopters came over our head, I noticed down the street about probably half a block's length from me, a line of police come up. And behind them was a fence, and behind them was the Intercontinental Hotel where the delegates for the FTA meetings were. And it was at the end of the day, around 4, 4:30, something like that. And so the people that were still in the streets and not in the arena wanted to make their voices heard to the delegates as they were going to come out. So, because we weren't allowed anywhere near the entrance, but if they drummed and sang and chanted loud enough, maybe they could hear them. So while I was sitting on the lawn, I watched people start to just drum, you know, and sing a little bit and chant. Meanwhile, another row of police came in with their batons in full riot gear, and behind them, another row of police came in on horseback. And they had big weapons that looked like cannons, almost. They reminded me of rocket launchers. And it was really quite frightening to see them. I was thinking in my mind, I don't want to be a part of this. I really want, something bad is going to happen. And I was thinking of my partner Liz, who really didn't want me to go. And she was afraid I was going to get hurt and had a really bad feeling. And I was thinking about her, too. A group of about maybe 50, maybe 100 protesters walked up towards the line of the police, beating on their drums. And the police made some kind of announcement on their bullhorn, and I didn't hear all the words of it because I was back pretty far away. Far enough away where I felt like I was safe, by the way. I was taking pictures, and I did have my camera. Part of what I heard on the bullhorn was something like, "We will allow you to remain here," and something else. A few minutes later, they started tear gassing everybody and moving in on the crowd. They started firing rubber bullets and beanbag bullets and pellets into the crowd. People started running in panic. I thought I was far enough away where I would be safe, and I didn't want to run. I'd had a lot of nonviolent training about how to act in a crowd when under attack, and one of the things not to do is to run. Mm-hmm. It's to walk slowly and deliberately and to keep people calm. So I tried to calm people down, and my partner I was with, my buddy for the demonstration, Cynthia, she and I turned around and we saw back at the very entrance of the arena were some more people in our cluster, all dressed in their tie-dye blue, and they were holding hands, and we could see that they were grounding and praying and trying to hold the space. And so I said, "Let's go towards them and we'll ground with them." And as we turned towards them to go, I was shot in the breast, in the left breast, right by my heart, with some kind of a huge weapon. I thought it was a rubber bullet was the first thought I had. Later we realized it was a very large beanbag filled with some kind of stones. And so this was almost a year ago now. I was taken to the hospital. Most of my other friends were chased down the streets. Some of them were clubbed. Some of them were arrested. Most of them were arrested. And people were traced. They were chased deliberately into a section of the town called Overtown. And Overtown is mostly African Americans. And I think the police intention was to create more violence. But instead, the wonderful people of Overtown took all the protesters into their homes and protected them and stood with them in solidarity. That's my story of what happened in Miami. There's many, many other stories. Hundreds of people were arrested. Others were beaten very violently with clubs and batons, and chased and shot at and tear gassed. Even our, we had a health center where there were street medics working. If anybody was hurt, it was a place they could go. The police actually went into the doorway of the clinic and pepper sprayed the wounded people and the medics who were working inside. They singled out the medics and the legal observers and arrested them and beat them. Since then, there's been lots of other protests around the country, and it hasn't been quite as bad, but because there's been a large cry of for our Constitution and for the rights of the people to assemble peacefully. And so we'll see what happens, but we call it now the Miami model, and John Timoney, the chief of police, will be held accountable for what he orchestrated it, but there are those above him also. He did orchestrate it, and I will be suing them. So that's my story.
Ba what's the matter with us? We're so comfortable, cozy. What's the matter with us? We're so daydreaming, dozy. Why are we polluting our children? There's no future in that. Why put food in our poison? There's no future in that. Why do away with our woodlands? Nothing to be gained from that. Why waste the best of our farmland? Where's the logic in that? What's the matter with us? Oh, what's the matter with us? Why be worrying each other? There's so much music to know. Why be fighting each other? So much good food to enjoy. Why so afraid of another? So many countries to know. Why so afraid of living when there's so much loving to do? What's the matter with us? I'm asking, do you know what's the matter with us? Thank you.
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinonwatakwisi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat Kitichi Native Center, write to Yat Kitichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Kitichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakwisin, to all of our relations.
The song you just heard prior to our Yat Kitichi Native Center program identification was a very fine flute song from Cedar Wind entitled Echo Canyon. And previously we also featured the song from environmental singer-songwriter Rafi, a reggae tune entitled What's the Matter with Us? Well, dear friends, I really want to thank today's very special program guest, Holly Rowan, peace and anti-globalization activist. And before we conclude, I want to explain a little bit, especially to our international audience, some of the meaning and background behind this song that we're going to feature as our concluding song, entitled Hudson Bay Blues, from my Blackfoot friend Jack Gladstone, from his Hawkstone CD production entitled Noble Heart. And this Blackfoot singer-songwriter Jack Gladstone song, Hudson's Bay Blues, is about the Hudson's Bay Company that was a massive business enterprise by European Americans in the so-called frontier times of North America to profit by obtaining many desired items from the indigenous peoples of what's now called the United States and Canada. Commonly referred to as the fur trade era, Hudson's Bay Company monopolized much of the economy between Indian country and white settlers. Often this was to the detriment of tribal communities and the animal and plant relations that our native people depended upon for our subsistence and spiritual well-being. Hudson's Bay and other trading companies often swindled Indian people. They introduced alcohol and prostitution into our native communities. The company actions greatly impacted our cultural societies by disrupting our tribal sense of community and sharing. Greed and disregard of many traditional ethics and clan codes of conduct infected our villages in a very short period of time. Hudson's Bay and other frontier companies also had a devastating impact from their white man's diseases spread by contract with traders. There is much evidence that diseases were purposely introduced by the trading companies in order to decimate our Indian people, who often were regarded as savages. Smallpox, for example, was laced on blankets that our Indian people obtained from company men, as well as by so-called government Indian agents from the War Department. In addition, many missionaries who abused our people were often financially backed by one of the trading companies. Many churches were built adjacent to the trading posts. These Christian fanatics did their best to whitewash our Indian people, forcing conversion to their strange religion in so-called civilized white man's materialistic society. Historically, it is important to note that Hudson's Bay and other so-called private companies' trading posts often were in partnership with settler governments through company land grants and charters that exploited the land and indigenous First Nations people, who we now call North American Indians. In 1793, for example, Hudson's Bay Company established the first trading post in Blackfeet Indian Country, and as our friend Jack Gladstone says, life was never the same. Now, in the 21st century, that colonial economic legacy is still sadly a strong power over many of the world's people, especially indigenous peoples in the Third World. The modern version of Hudson's Bay is globalization. The control by the industrialized countries over less developed nations continues to expand. It is just like the mountain men fur traders centuries ago in North America, or the European and American sea captains who sailed the oceans under government authority and corporate sponsorship for economic and political occupation of lands held sacred by non-white civilizations. The devastation to Mother Earth and the ever-widening gap between rich and poor of the world is a major concern of us here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center. The protection of our biosphere and the elimination of poverty in the world must become one of the most vital priorities of humankind. Tragically, this critical concern seems to be overshadowed by greed on the part of many industrialized countries and their global economic systems. These include, as we've spoken about today, the so-called World Trade Organization, the North American Free Trade Agreement, GATT, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, and of course the role of the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and many other international financial and so-called development institutions and agencies. Many of us who oppose this expansion of the more than 500 years of exploitations from the days of Christopher Columbus up to the present in the new millennium fight against this plague known as globalization. So, dear friends, I want to thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center, broadcast on Global Community Radio, Radio for Peace International. We conclude now with the song Hudson's Bay Blues. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Thank you for listening. Aho, can I want to talk with sin to all of our relations?
I was riding on my pony, hunting bison on the plains, when the moccasin telegraph reported something strange. There was someone building lodges made with stone and logs. They had bushes on their faces and funky looking dogs. They were loading up big bundles from triple wide canoes, full of trading items out of sight. Creation sang the blues. Tomorrow's our grand opening. Grab your ropes and furs. We'll wheel and deal and feast and drink until you engines purr. Oh, we didn't know shopping. We didn't go shopping. We didn't start shopping till the Hudson's Bay Company. With horses and dogs, a pile of skins, it was unfamiliar territory we had wandered in. A bushy-faced Napiquan said, sit, we'll smoke and drink, as we prepared our sacred pipe, the Napiquan just went. When the smoke was over, they said, got a gift for you that'll fill your head with visions, make you strong and happy too. We didn't quite know what to think before we drank that rum. Was fire, water, devil's daughter, rabbit on the run. They got us ready for shopping. They got us ready for shopping. Yeah, we were ready for shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company. Beans, denim jeans, iron awls, musket balls, powder horns and pretty shawls, blankets, buttons, bolts of flannel, silver bells and tallow candles, sugar flour, dark molasses, colored beads and looking glasses, pale ale, gin and brandy, fine wine and hard rock candy. Right through service was awful handy. Oh, we couldn't stop shopping.
No, we couldn't stop shopping.
We wouldn't stop shopping.
We wouldn't stop shopping.
We couldn't stop shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company. Now we got spandex, Gore-Tex, Nike Airs, gummy bears, ceiling fans, frying pans, turkey veal, shrimp or spam, sales cycle, sports rackets, rollerblades and jean jackets, keyboards to surf the net, on a tidal wave of debt, MasterCard, Visa card, Christopher Columbus card, American Espresso, Lord, every kind of card. Oh, we can't stop shopping.
Oh, we can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping.
We can't stop shopping at the Hudson's Bay Company.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing native peoples throughout the world with native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.